From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the school lunch line at Greece Odyssey Academy. Here's the story, as reported by Justin Murphy in the Democrat and Chronicle. Eighth grade student David Leonard was getting lunch when he was told by the cafeteria cashier that his mom needed to add more money to his account. Now, David had forgotten to bring this up with his mom. David qualifies for reduced price lunch, which means for him, it's only a quarter. But on this day, as he stood there with a tray of hot lunch, he didn't have the quarter to cover it. As Justin Murphy reports, the cashier told him no money, no food. She took his tray and sent him away, not even a PBJ to hold him down. His mother said to the Democrat and Chronicle, quote, "What does that teach a kid? I'm a tough mom, and I try to teach my kids responsibility, but I don't think a kid should spend 7 or 8 hours a day in school without food. Feed the kid and take it up with the parent," end quote. It turns out that some Rochester area school districts have a written policy denying food in some circumstances if children don't have money in their account. And that might have you wondering, what's my own district's policy? Why do we prevent kids from getting fed in school? Is there a better way? The situation is often described as lunch shaming. Governor Andrew Cuomo called for a statewide ban on lunch shaming in his recent budget address. Nearly 1 in 10 children in the Rochester suburbs had a negative school lunch account balance on any given day last spring, and many, according to the Democrat and Chronicle, are being denied lunch as a result. So after reading his story, we invited Justin Murphy to come on the show to discuss it. He is here. Thanks for coming back in, Justin. We appreciate the time.
Hey, Evan.
Also with us is Mike Bulger, who is a Healthy Communities Coordinator for the Healthy Kids Coalition at Common Ground Health. Mike, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Debbie Beauvais is here. She's a school nutrition director at Gates Chilai, East Rochester, and East Irondequoit Central School Districts, also with the National School Nutrition Association Board. What does that mean, Debbie? Welcome to the program. Thanks for being here. Tell me about the National Association. What are you guys working on?
The National School Nutrition Association is the professional organization for all people that serve meals in school and our industry partners. Obviously, we're passionate about making sure kids have healthy meals in school, and we're a big advocacy group for regulations surrounding that.
Very good. Well, thank you for being here. Also here is Kiara Warren, who is a parent who's got a lot to say about the subject of shaming and the impact on kids. Kiara, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Casey Kasorik is back. Casey is superintendent of the Hilton Central School District. Casey, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Justin, I want to start with you on this. I learned a lot from your program, and you told the story as I started the program out of Greece. I know you gave them a chance to respond. What did they have to say about that story?
Well, you know, the story sounds bad when you spell it out like that, but they didn't deny it. And in fact, as much as districts might not like to talk about it, that sort of thing happens a lot in around Rochester and everywhere else in the country. That's sort of what this has been a topic in a lot of places around the country. I wanted to look at it here. So the way I attacked this story is I asked every single district in the suburbs, because this doesn't apply to Rochester, as we'll talk about later. On a given day, May 1st of last spring, how many kids have an overdrawn account and how much do they owe? And what I found was that there's about 5,000 kids in the Rochester area who owed some money on their lunch account, had a zero balance or less. And that added up to about $20,000. So that's almost 1 in 10 kids in the county don't have any money in their account. So that's, you know, you're at the restaurant and your debit card comes back, and what happens? So then the next thing I wanted to do is look through what every district's policy is in that case. And there's a wide range of them. And Casey, he'll tell you about in Hilton, they recently adopted a very liberal policy. Other districts have less so. But there are many schools around Rochester, and Greece is only one of them, where ultimately, if a kid goes through enough steps and is of a certain age maybe, if he comes through with a hot plate of lunch, they'll say, no, you can't have it, and they'll take it away.
That's part of – okay, so this is what was jarring to me. Throwing trays away, is that actual written policy in any districts?
That's not what's written down, but if
– But it happens.
If the district says – I mean, part of the whole thing here is the kid gets the food and then goes to the lunch line. So if he picks something up that he's not entitled to, just as if you went into a buffet at a restaurant, pick up food that you're not entitled to, you bring it to the register. If the district's policy is you can't continue to eat this hot food after your balance is at a certain state, they're going to take it away. And now I'm not saying that they're always necessarily going to dunk it into the garbage can right in front of the kid and all of his friends, but you know, they take it away and it ends up going in the trash as opposed to back in the line for another kid to eat.
So they are throwing it away. And this is what Jennifer Leonard also told Justin Murphy for the story in the Democrat and Chronicle about her own son. Quote, he was mostly ashamed that it happened, and he was afraid I'd be mad at him for forgetting to tell me to add money to his account. He's 13 years old, and he doesn't want his friends to think he's so poor he can't afford lunch, end quote. That's a lot on a kid's mind there. And so, I know we're talking about Greece, and they have to deal with certain privacy or their own examinations of it. So I don't want to just talk about Greece, but compared to nationwide, how does our sort of set of schools here compare to what we typically find across the country?
What I found in the most recent survey was that there's quite a small minority of schools nationally. As I recall in the story, it was fewer than 5% have policies saying that kids do not get food in any circumstances. In the Rochester area, it was somewhat higher than that. I think there were 7 different districts out of 18 that I surveyed that in certain circumstances, usually for older kids, didn't give them food. Now, I should also say that there are 3 districts, for instance, that have a policy that allows for not giving hot food, any food, to elementary school students in some cases. In Gates Chile is one of them, but as Debbie will tell you, that is not in fact what they do in practice. So that was sort of a third finding I found, is that some districts don't have a written practice to begin with. In Gates Chile, they do, but there's a little bit of wiggle room in it. And several school nutrition directors, including Debbie, were adamant that they would never let a 6-7-year-old kid go hungry for the day.
She just flinched physically when you brought up Gates Chile. So go ahead, Debbie.
Quite honestly, Evan, in May of last year, a memo came out from New York State Education Department that asked all of us to revisit our charging policies. And many districts across the country or across the county have done just that. Justin's looked at my policy before. We had one of the strictest policies in the county. Now every child in elementary school gets the meal as they come through the line. We don't talk to the child about any money. We only talk to the parent. And an alternate meal is given, but it's not given until 3, 4, or 5 meals have been charged. And when that meal has given, there's already been communication with the parent through letters, emails, phone calls. There's a great collaboration at Gates Chile between the school nutrition team and also the administrators at the school buildings. I will say the air in the lunchroom in elementary schools with kids knowing they don't have to worry about money has changed the whole atmosphere of serving meals. So we reacted and responded to the direction from state education to update our policy.
Tell me more about that change. You said the atmosphere has changed. Tell me more about that.
Well, the kids don't have to worry about when they get to the register, is the cashier going to say, do you have money for lunch today, Sam? And Sam goes, no, I don't. And then the conversation would continue on, oh, well, here's a note. Can you give it to your mom? Make sure you bring money tomorrow. I'd hate to have to give you an alternate meal. That conversation is totally gone out of the serving lines. At the middle school level, we're telling them, hey, you need to get some money on your account, but we're not physically taking trays away at elementary and middle school. The high school is a different scenario. We've had a no-charge policy in place for several years. It's nothing new. We communicate it. It's in the handbook. Emails go out. We empower the students to put the app on their phone where they can look and see how much money's on their account. Parents can get emails. Students can set up emails when it's low. Parents can even use this free service to set up an automatic debit from their account. I think you mentioned your child's at East Rochester. The same app is at your school district, Evan. You could do the same thing for your child. It empowers parents to see exactly what their children are eating, how much money's there, how they're spending it, and the parent has to set up those alerts. We can't do it for them because it's a password-protected system. But many families have auto-replenish. So when the account gets to $5, it puts another $20 in or whatever the parent designates.
And I want to make sure I understand fully when you say at the elementary level, you will do alternative meals, but only after 3, 4, or 5 you know, say, so make sure I understand. So the, here's what I'm envisioning. Tell me if this is correct. So a child at the elementary level comes through the line with a hot lunch, but there's no money in the account. Child mm-hmm. does not have money. You're not going to say, you can't eat that today.
That's correct.
You're going to contact the parent, let them know, and say, hey, just so you know, and we've got to get this squared away.
Mm-hmm.
Child comes through the line again.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to tell the kid, hey, you can't eat that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if this continues to happen, mm-hmm. what you may eventually do is say to the child, hey, we've got a peanut butter and jelly or a cold sandwich or something instead for you. Here's this. And then you're communicating with the parent. So they're still eating, but not the hot lunch. Is
right.
that correct?
And we get to the child because of the collaboration with the teacher and the school administration. The child doesn't have a swap out of anything on his tray. Someone, the school monitor or one of my team, walks the child down the line and kind of says, Mom would like you to have this today. Because Mom or Dad knows that we've contacted them several times. Unfortunately, now they owe us $25. They're going to get what's on the menu, but it will be the turkey sandwich instead of chicken nuggets. Or
okay.
pizza. But okay. we're not taking trays away from the little ones.
And before I turn to our other guests, do you think that other policies in other districts, again, I know you're working with Gates, Charlotte, East Rochester, East Irondequoit, you know, you're not in control of the policy for every district. Are some getting it wrong? I mean, is it wrong to have kids feeling the way, you know, the student who Justin profiled, for example, felt?
I need to say that those of us that work in this industry of school nutrition, we're very passionate about feeding the kids healthy meals. I'm a dietitian. I want kids to have healthy meals. It prepares them for the day. I think the instances of swapping out trays is really when it's a frequent offender that the debt gets high. I can't speak to what other school districts do, but our county association is a tight-knit group, and we share ideas, and we're all working on it. Policies, as Casey probably can allude to, I know my superintendent would say, they're always up for revision and review. So if it's broken and we still think we have to revise it, we will do that. What we're doing now seems to be working quite well. Even the no-charge policy at the high school, which we've had in place for several years, it's a known fact. It's a difficult one to implement at the start, but you know, we're empowering. There's plenty of tools out there, and they're free to our parents.
All right. One of our listeners, Jill, wants to know if people not associated with the child could pay off past due student lunch debt for the family, much like Christmas layaway Secret Santas. That's from Jill. And Justin, I think you at least talked a little bit about community groups offering some help.
Yeah, certainly. Across the country, and including here, there have been, GoFundMe pages and that sort of thing to have an account. I know Debbie told me that at one of the schools in Gates-Chiley, the elementary school PTA came together and paid off all the kids' debt. And I should say that, you know, as we're talking about policy and practice, another big part, I think, of what happens in practice is that if a kid comes through and doesn't have money and his teacher or some other teacher is behind him or in front of him in lunch, they'll say, I got you today, Evan. Talk to Mom tonight. And I heard that in a number of districts.
Okay. So let me ask Superintendent Casey Kasorek from the Hilton Central School District, who's listed as, I think, if I'm remembering, Justin, the only district in Monroe County with the explicit, you know, no denial of lunch policies. So, Casey, why don't you tell me about what the policy is, when it was in place, and why it is there?
Well, really, it's a work in progress. What we did is we did have some parents that escalated to the point of meeting with me and having some conversations about this. So Scott Zielbrowski, our director of food service, also serving on some national level committees and state level committees, we really talked about what this would look like moving forward. So I think what's important for the listener to hear too, because from Justin's article, when you do it, read it quickly, you see this kindergartner, you see this person taking a hot lunch away, you see embarrassment, and I do believe across the nation there have been some situations like that, and maybe you can draw some back to the Rochester area as well. But people need to understand that the food service budget is completely separate than the overall operational budget in a district. And so what happens is at the end of the year, to rectify the books, if there is a deficit in food service, that comes from the general budget for a school district. So we're always talking about being sensitive with taxpayer dollars. There's a 2% tax cap. The cost of operating continues to increase. So every time we take a look look at something. If we had $100,000 of unpaid for school lunches, that would come out of the general budget. So I think sometimes that's not always illustrated. Doesn't take anything away from the fact that I think everybody in this room today wants kids to be nourished and to have a hot lunch. Arguably, that's the case. That's what we all want because we care about kids. So what we did is we just sat down and we had a conversation, and I asked some specific questions. How much does a hot lunch cost? How much does the backup lunch cost? In our district, they cost the same. So why would we take the hot lunch and throw it out and then pay for a backup lunch? It just didn't seem to make sense. So on that side of the argument, we tried to become a bit more liberal, and we're not too far off from the rest of the districts in Monroe County. We just were a little more loose in that approach. So we're being trusting, as was mentioned earlier, calling parents, not doing it in an embarrassing fashion, making sure that we're communicating. We also have the Hilton Educational Foundation, so similar to what Justin talked about. It's an outside group that raises funds, and they will often help pay off student balances, definitely for students who are in need. And we really try to make sure that anyone who's eligible for free and reduced lunch has that opportunity, so we can enroll someone in that program at any time. We're very private about it, but we really want to make sure that everyone's getting that hot meal. So we haven't figured it all out. It's a work in progress. I really don't know if we're that far ahead of our colleagues. I think they're all doing good work on behalf of students as well, but that is a conversation that we've had in Hilton for about 4 months. We've been attempting to implement that. And that's not to say on a given day that we slip to our old practices, but we've really worked hard to make sure that when children are in that situation, especially at the high school, I think when you look at the policies as outlined in the article, that all districts are very liberal with our youngest learners. It's when you start to get to the high school students. I've been giving the analogy, you know, you go to McDonald's and you go to pay for it. If you don't have the money, they're not going to give you the food. And that seems like a harsh analogy, but it really comes down to those folks that continue to abuse the system. And it's a very small percentage for the most part. But so that's the flip side of the argument on how do you hold folks accountable over the long haul.
Okay, so we've got some listener questions I think will be well-suited for our other guests who are going to weigh in just a second, so I'm going to start with Stephen Brighton on the phone. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, Evan. I have a son who's in high school in Brighton, and we give him his money for his account every week, and sometimes we forget. When he does not have money in his account, they will not feed him, okay? And I realize that's my fault or his mother's fault. However, it annoys me that he would have to go without food all day, you know, but that's a real thing. Okay.
Yeah. And Steve, but as you say there, you know, you just listen to what Casey Kasorik, the superintendent of Hilton, had to say about, you know, as mm-hmm. kids, that certainly it sounds like districts view a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old differently than they do a 16-year-old.
And I understand that.
Okay.
I do. Oh, I do. Yeah, I understand.
So are you looking for a little more leniency? In other words, if you are not a serial offender, and I don't mean like a Frosted Flakes offender, I mean like a routine offender, would you look for the leniency because, you know, you don't want a child to not have a meal for the day, but at the same time, you know, you'll cover it, you'll figure it out?
Yes, I do look for it because they know that we're going to cover it, okay, and they know that we can cover it, and we always do. On the other hand, I grew up in a very impoverished school district, and what I saw was, and I'm an old guy, okay, and there were free lunches back then, but what I saw was is that there was an attitude that, well, why should they get free lunches and we don't get free lunches? And what I saw back then was that people who had way more means than even maybe my family did, they got free lunches. And that was very annoying. So I don't know how you deal with that. And I have relatives whose children got free lunches, and they have lots of money. So I just don't know how you appropriately do that. I hope someone figures it out.
Yeah, Steve, okay. Thank you for the phone call. Yeah. So he's given us a couple of things there. So there's the nutrition side, which we're going to get to, but I want to start on a little bit of the policy side there, because at least as a parent, Casey Kasorik, superintendent of Hilton, My thought would be this. If I'm sure Steve is correct in his observations where he's been in different states and different places, and maybe around here, there's some disparity in who is eligible for reduced price lunches or assistance, et cetera, and some families may be rubbed the wrong way. What I would hope is, whatever the policy is, kids aren't talking about it. Kids aren't, leave the kids out of it. You know, I don't want it overly public which kid is getting help, because unfortunately, shaming starts to happen at all levels. If this kid's viewed as needing help, this kid's not. I would like the kids to be left out as much as possible. Is that fair?
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. We want to keep the children out of it. We want to keep that situation clear of their ears. And we really want to deal with parents and guardians, making sure that they're feeling supported. So this should never be punitive. There are a lot of offerings to support families out there. We have the Cadet Cupboard, which is a backpack program that sends food home with folks that might need that gap filled over the weekend. We have a summer program, as I mentioned, the Hilton Educational Foundation. So there are a lot of things out there that can be done in a confidential fashion through the school counselor, through the school administration. So absolutely, we want everybody walking through that line treated with dignity and respect and feeling equal. And so that's really our goal, and I know it is of my colleagues as well.
And Debbie, can districts be more flexible with high school students if it's a good faith mistake and if there's a good relationship with the parents and the expectation is, okay, they get the meal today, it'll get covered, as opposed to, you know, repeat issues?
We can. I get calls regularly. Oh my God, I just saw that my son left the lunch money on the counter. So we reach out to the manager and find the child and find the cashier who's going to wait on him and say, let that go. I would like to circle back, though, to the phone call, the free and reduced, how people get that status. It's a federal program with very specific guidelines. People apply for free and reduced meals. The application is the same across the country. There's salary ranges that are put on it for members in the household. It's not something the district has a subjectivity to, and that information is kept very, very confidential. If someone called me on the phone, a teacher, and said, hey, can you tell me if Susie gets free lunch, I can't divulge that.
Okay.
We make every effort to keep that confidential.
Appropriately so. Well, let me turn to Mike and Kiara. And Kiara is a parent who has a five-year-old, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, what is your mindset as a parent when it comes to knowing what your child is going to be getting for lunch, the importance of good nutrition for the child, and any concerns that you have, you know, in hearing about how kids are feeling when they're either being judged or feeling like, well, the other kids are going to know if I can't afford lunch, et cetera.
I think that it's very important. I'm a very involved parent. I like to know that my son is eating every day. I like to know what he's eating, if he's getting, you know, all the fruits and veggies and different things that he's supposed to have. I know there are different options and that, you know, kids can choose what they want, but I'm definitely very involved as far as anything school related goes. And I think that it's important for all kids to have the same opportunities. I don't like the idea of a kid worrying about if they're going to be able to eat when all their peers are eating, or if, you know, it's not their fault that mom and dad didn't give them money. I think kids are exposed to enough trauma and stress and don't need to worry about if they're going to get a meal during the day at school. We know that in order to thrive to their best potential, kids need to be as supported socially and emotionally as possible, and I don't feel like worrying about a lunch is something that is going to help produce those results.
And I know you think that shaming kind of, maybe the definition should be even broader or more understood for kids, because kids who have special needs with food or allergies, et cetera, may deal with it too.
Yes, of course. My son has food allergies, so there's been times where he's been separated. I mean, some schools have special tables, and his peers that may have peanut allergies or egg allergies or milk allergies may sit there as well. But I think there's definitely levels to it, and it's not just a financial thing.
Does that make sense to separate by allergies? If some kids could have a life-threatening allergy.
Yes, in some cases. Like, peanut is one of the worst ones.
Yeah.
So that's definitely, I mean, a lot of schools don't have peanuts in the environment, but there's other allergies out there, such as milk or eggs, which my son has both. And it, depending on the level of the severity of the reaction that the kid has, it can definitely be life-threatening, and they should be separated. But there's a way, I think there's an appropriate way to do that.
Okay. Before I turn to Mike Bulger, real quick, Debbie, you want to weigh in on that, and, you know, appropriate ways to handle the different food needs and making sure kids don't feel, you know, separated in a way that is otherized, for lack of a better
term. Right. With dealing with children with special allergies or diet needs, I have to say I look at it as a case-by-case approach, and it's a team approach with the school nurse, the teacher, my department, and the family, definitely in the conversation. Every parent has a different perception on how they'd like to see their child's allergies handled in the school environment. There's parents that don't want any food from the school at all, be it in the classroom, at a party, or from the cafeteria, and they bring it all in from home. But then there's other families that want that child to be immersed in the school experience, and part of eating lunch with their friends is part of that experience. So we have to make accommodations that fit the needs of the child, keep that child safe, but also give them the social-emotional experience that the parents are looking for. So it's definitely a case-by-case.
Now, Mike Bulger is a Healthy Communities Coordinator with the Healthy Kids Coalition at Common Ground Health. What's the broad view you have on this issue of lunch shaming, and what kind of policies do you want to see? What concerns you most with this issue?
I think what concerns me most is the idea around stigmatizing the child. And that, you know, I would include teens in that as well. Both young children and as they get older, increasingly teens are concerned about what their peers think. And they're concerned about status. They, you know, don't have the agency to go out and vote. They don't have the agency to go out and work a full-time job. They're supposed to be in school. They're required to be there. And to, you know, sort of criminalize them because their parents are delinquent on their bills, or to refer to them as offenders, I think that really creates an unfair situation for the kids. They're not the people in power here, and they're the people being punished. In a broader view, if we want our kids to be successful in school, and we want to have, you know, a future generation that is thriving, we need to make sure that their educational experience is as good as it can be. We pay for their buses, we pay for their books, and to use food in this way, or to, you know, create barriers for them to be fed and have that positive experience in the lunchroom is undermining the rest of their education and the rest of their development.
When it comes to what we do decide to pay or who pays for what, David in Pittsford might have a little something to add to that. So let's listen to this, and we'll have Mike and the panel respond. Go ahead, David.
Hi. We're paying over $100 a day for in our property taxes for those kids to go to school. And for that, I expect the kid to learn something. And if that kid can't learn because the district nitpicked 25 cents out of their lunch account or something, I think that that is grossly wrong. And considering what the superintendent is being paid, you know, maybe the superintendent ought to chip in the 25 cents or whatever it is. These kids have to be fed and put into an environment that is conducive to learning.
Okay. David, thanks for the phone call. I'll start with you, Mike. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, he's upset, and on a gut level, I agree with him. We invest a lot in our schools. We invest a lot in our kids. We invest a lot in our lunch programs, and it's not just the food cost. It's administrative. It's the workforce, and we need to, you know, take a look at how we approach that and ask ourselves, are we investing enough? Do we want food to be supportive of the educational experience, or do we want it to just be sort of an auxiliary maintenance thing to make sure that the kids get through the day? I think that there's a lot of room for us to reconsider how we approach it. And as you found in Hilton, there were efficiencies to making it more lenient and making sure that it's easier for kids to eat. We spend a lot of money figuring out who deserves a free lunch and who deserves a reduced price lunch and who doesn't. And You know, I would encourage people to go with their gut and follow the idea that, you know, we need to make sure that all kids are fed and that all kids have a gratifying and dignified meal and an opportunity to be the best that they can be.
Okay, Justin.
And I think that the way that Mike is looking at this is very important. And the last thing I would want anybody who to have taken away from the story I did is to think that there are scores of dastardly lunch ladies across Monroe County just stealing kids' lunches. That's obviously not what we're talking about. They're the ones who get stuck with the situation where the district hasn't been able to communicate or mom and dad haven't stepped up in the way that they're supposed to, whatever it is. So to the extent that districts like Hilton and like all the districts really recently are looking at this and thinking about it in terms of what is their responsibility in terms of providing education for their children with the revenues that they get, and that's a separate issue in school nutrition, that's really the place where it needs to be handled. And, you know, the instances of throwing food out are obviously the salacious ones, and that gets everybody's ire up, and that's absolutely a problem. But it really needs to be addressed at a higher level than that.
Okay, and Superintendent Kasorek, you want to respond to David's phone call as well briefly there? Go ahead.
Well, absolutely. I would side with Mike's comment as well. I think we would be very open to a universal feeding, if you would. So every child that comes to school gets a meal. It really comes down to the financial side of things. And you know, how are we going to fund that? I took a look at universal feeding at Hilton, and just to provide lunch for anyone who wanted it is around a $2 million price tag. If you were to add breakfast, you're looking at another $500,000. So I'm not saying it's not something that's going to happen, but unfortunately, I know we could argue this on both sides, but it would be an additional burden to the taxpayer, and it would be a part of the operational budget. So I think that it has merit and has possibility. Unfortunately, we live in a world of laws or unfunded mandates sometimes that we have to pick up at the local level. But I think it's, I would say it's more than 25 cents. So I just would put the point back to the listener that absolutely. But it does compound. And if you've read Justin's article, you can see that it can be a hefty bill. And I don't want that to be lost, that we need to be providing our children with a good meal, and we need to be removing all the stresses we can so that they can learn. So I don't think you'll find an educator that disagrees with that. Like I said, it does cross over into the business side of things sometimes, and we have to look at doing things in a different way.
All right, Karen, Dawn, we're going to come back to you first, then Karen and Henrietta. We're going to get your comments on the phone after our only break, very brief break. We're here because of the excellent reporting by Justin Murphy in the Democrat and Chronicle. You might have heard Governor Andrew Cuomo recently say that he wants to ban lunch shaming, and if you don't know what that is, Justin's report in the Democrat and Chronicle lays that out. So we're having a conversation about it, and we're going to come back to your phone calls after our only break. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, two very different views of our economic system. First hour, a conversation about the tipped wage credit, restaurant setup and working, and also how some people in the Fight for 15 movement think we need to change our expectations for what we pay workers. But in the second hour, a view of conscious capitalism, preserving the system but making it more ethical. We'll talk about how Monday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. One quick email before we go to the phones. It's from James. He says, hello, Evan and panel. As a professional, I've supported school nutrition programs across the nation for 6 years. This is an important topic and an issue that has been present since we started serving food in schools. We're just becoming more sensitive and aware of the impact on children, and we're trying to eliminate the shaming problem. The difficulty is gradually shifting the obligation of having money at the lunch line from the student to the parent and district. It is never the child's fault. Good to teach them responsibilities, but not when it comes to their food in school. The difficulty is money. Districts have little recourse for collecting funds from parents. They are stuck, and unfortunately, instances of shaming occurs. School food service programs need more of our support. Thanks for this conversation. That's from James. Let me get to your phone calls, and Dawn first on the line. Go ahead, Dawn. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I just wanted to tell you an experience that my daughter had in the district that we live in. I don't want to mention the name because I have another kid still in the district. But when she was in fourth grade, she went through the lunch line and had her hot meal. And I guess the day before or a couple of days before, she said, Mom, I only have $1 left on my account, and I totally forgot. So when she got up there, the lunch lady said, nope, took her tray, threw it in the trash, and actually got a bag, I guess it had peanut butter and jelly, and threw it at her. And she's a fourth grader. And she was devastated because she was with her friends, and I thought that was terrible.
What did you do about it? Did you talk to the district?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, they deny doing things like that. Okay. But I know my daughter isn't going to make something up like that. She's in fourth grade, you know. So.
Okay.
But she's a senior in college now, but it still bothers me to this day, you know.
Dawn, thank you for the phone call. I know that's not an easy story to share, and I think the point that Debbie Beauvais was making earlier, Debbie's school nutrition director at Gates Chi-Lai, East Rochester, and East Irondequoit Central, and she's also with the National School Nutrition Association Board, is that, you know, incidents like this are, they're not happening every day, thank goodness, and to the extent that they're happening, you know, human beings make mistakes. What would you say to a parent like that if she came to you and had an experience like that?
The first thing, I would obviously be very apologetic.
Yeah.
I would get the information and go back and train staff. I mean, I would like to think that that doesn't happen in my districts, but, you know, everybody has a bad day and says or does something they may not intend. So the calls in my priorities of the day, any calls from parents about anything regarded school lunch go to the top of the to-do list, because we all know that a bad story travels faster than a good one. So it's best to get to the root of the problem. If it's something we can fix, absolutely, we're going to fix it. My heart goes out to her that that happened. She said the child's now in college. So that was many, many, you know, years back. I don't believe that is the practice now with the new regulations that have been put in place for how we handle this.
Okay. Let me get Karen and Henrietta next on the phone. Go ahead, Karen.
Yes, hi. It's a really interesting, sometimes sad conversation going on here. But I wanted to share what my father did with us when we were young kids. And he, in his desk drawer, he had this money box. It was like a tin. And he would put all kinds of change in it. And it was up to us to go get what we needed to be able to buy lunch. And it seems to me it's not an issue that should be all the parents, and taking away a sense of children learning to take care of themselves. But nowadays it's not just coins. It would need to be a money box with dollar bills in it. But I'd like to see something where we're not just saying that it's, we all have to remove the stress from the child. I think, who knows, if we take care of everything for children, what are they learning? On the other hand, we don't want our children to be shamed in any way, shape, or form. But I think if there's a way to be able to share that, and if you have the money to be able to put maybe 20 singles in a tin every week, then it's something shared. And it was, I mean, I really felt like my father was taking care of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think anything twice of me going in and taking much more than I ever needed, but it was really like just a really nice balance. I loved it.
Yeah.
I still had some autonomy around it. That, yeah. I could go in and I could get the money and he didn't just hand it to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So Karen, first of all, thank you for the phone call and for sharing a story on something that worked for you and worked for your family. It worked. It taught you responsibility. It was good for you. And I think a lot of people probably feel like if some sort of model or similar model happened in every household, we wouldn't be sitting here today. I think that's a wonderful story to share. It's great ideas for family. So thank you for that, Karen. The challenge becomes, if I'm Casey Kasorik or if I'm Debbie Beauvais or if I'm, you know, working in this industry and not everybody is your family, what's our policy going to be? And so I want to ask Kiara Warren as a parent, you know, I mean, I think her idea is a personal experience. It's a good one. But are you then concerned for the classmates who don't have that, you know, sort of setup with parents?
Yes, I think that just in general, we live in a different society this day and age where parents are working a lot more and they're not always home or thinking of, you know, every little detail in a day. So I think it's definitely a case-by-case basis as far as families are concerned, just because every family is so different. I grew up in a household where my grandmother was home for most of the day, so she had the time to remember to remind me about lunch money and a lot of other things. But we live in a day and age where there's parents that are working, you know, 2-3 jobs in different shifts and may not have that availability to spend to do some things like that.
I think that's well said. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously we all want to teach kids about responsibility, and we would all wish that everybody's parents, you know, were able to provide that lunch tin. But unfortunately, you know, members of our society are going to fall through the cracks and are falling through the cracks. You know, whether or not they qualify for a free lunch at the beginning of the school year is not always going to be predictive of whether or not they qualify for that lunch all the way through. And the same goes for reduced. All sorts of things can happen to a family over the course of a school year. So we need to have a policy that accounts for that and make sure that kids, regardless of their home life, are given an opportunity at school.
All right, Superintendent of Hilton, Casey Kosorek, what do you think?
Well, I agree. I think that things are changing. The families that we may have been raised in, there are different parenting situations, and we do have to relieve that stress. But I think it's a ledger. I think there's the side of the ledger that the school is responsible for, and I think there's a parent ledger as well. And although we want to remove all the variables, I think it's important, and something that we stress at Hilton and across the county are, this is a partnership. So, you know, it's just not always the district doing every single thing for the families we serve. It's a partnership. And I think we can't lose perspective of that partnership. I think it's important to remove those barriers and do what's right by kids. But we also have to continue to understand and work with families because they're in this journey together as well. So I don't want to sound like I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth, but it's really important to make sure that our kids are nourished. But it's also important to build that relationship with families. And if you have that good relationship, I think you're going to alleviate a lot of the issues that we're talking about today. And it will be a small percentage of folks that you're working with.
All right, let me shift the conversation a bit, because Jim emails the program to say, beyond the conversation regarding paying for school lunches, what are the thoughts about the quality and nutritional value of the lunches provided? With volume, economies of scale, and more families seeing school-provided lunches as a quality option, would that help all students to offset districts' costs so all students with differing economic circumstances could be supported? He says the quality of the lunches compared to what U.S. kids are receiving as food is of significantly better quality in Europe. Why is that? Could we ever get on par with what kids are offered for lunch in Europe? Thus, more families participate, and in turn, it could help all students regardless of their economic circumstances. I want everyone to weigh in on that. And Debbie, is that fair to make that comparison, first of all?
I can hear Debbie's brain whirring from over here.
I need to share that the regulations that we're held to for schools that participate in the National School Lunch Program, which means we get reimbursements. School meal prices range from under $2 to up to $3 in this area, if we look in Western New York. And for all the food items that we provide, 8 ounces of milk, 2 ounces of whole grain, 2 ounces of protein, and up to 2 cups of fruits and vegetables on the tray, many of them fresh, that's an expense that far exceeds $1.50 or even a $3 lunch. So the government is subsidizing that program. And for those subsidies, we have to play by their rules, 100% whole grain, 100% whole grain rich, lean protein, reduced sodium, reduced fat. I can't speak to the funding model in Europe because I don't know it firsthand.
Can you speak to the quality? Is it food? Are school lunches better in Europe? I don't know the answer off here.
I have heard this statement before, but I believe in some scenarios in Europe, all kids eat for free, and it's one meal for all. And even children participate in the process of lunch. You may have a maitre d' that greets students. You may have children setting tables. They make it part of the educational day. So it's a whole different model than the way the schools in this area are set up.
Okay. It sounds like you have a lot of strictures that you're operating with a lot of constraints on what you can do and what you can offer. Is that fair?
Yes, but the bottom line is what we are serving in schools under these regulations are healthy meals.
Okay, Mike, you happy with what you're seeing in schools?
I think that there's definitely room to improve. I think that there's definitely an opportunity to make school food better. If you think about stigma, right? So we're talking about stigma as it pertains to lunch shaming and kids being denied food. But there's also another stigma when you separate kids by their family's income. And some kids eat the school lunch, and sometimes that lunch isn't really attractive to all the kids. So the kids with means bring their own lunch or go off campus and eat off lunch. And that does a couple things. One is it reduces the sales for the school district and hurts their budget.
And some of what Jim is saying in the email. Yep, go ahead.
And the other is it creates that sort of stigma around the kids who don't have any other option. A third thing that it does is it removes the parents who might have more disposable income and more time, disposable time possibly, from the school lunch program. And they're no longer advocating for quality meals or for better reimbursement for the school district so that they can afford better quality ingredients. So I think that that's something that we should also be cognizant of as well. In order to improve school meal, having the entire community care about it and not just those that are forced to eat the school meals might be an avenue for finding opportunities to afford better quality or integrate school lunch into the curriculum.
But that's sort of a cultural change and not a policy change, it sounds like.
It is. I think that if you want to get into policy, then you're going to be talking about more money per lunch. There was a time when the school lunch mandate, everybody was supposed to get school lunches, but there wasn't really any funding for it. And then we had the war against poverty and the war against hunger. And then in the 80s, there was a measure of austerity that reduced some of the reimbursements for the partially subsidized meals. And even the full price meals, the kids who are paying full price, those meals are also subsidized by the government. So by reducing the subsidies for the reduced price meals and the full price meals, it drove more and more middle income people out of the school lunch program. And actually, some schools dropped out of the program altogether, and some people's participation rates and therefore their reimbursement rates went down. So it was meant to focus more resources on the lower income and the fully free meals, but it actually ended up hurting the budget by driving some of the borderline people away from the program.
Debbie, you want to add to that? I know you've got some documents there.
Well, I thought it might be helpful to just share the reimbursement rates that we got from the government. And in New York, people that qualify for reduced meals only pay a quarter because New York does kick in the difference. Nationally, it's 40 cents. But for a meal that's served free at lunch, we get $3.35. A reduced meal, we get $3.08. And for that paid meal, we get about 43 cents. But I need to say that this isn't just for the food. This is for the food, the labor, the supplies, and oven breaks. We have to use our school lunch funding to cover those costs. Really, school meal programs are restaurants running within the districts. The superintendent shared that our budget is separate from the school budget.
We remain a society that doesn't, at least a country, that doesn't want to spend a lot of its income on food. At least that's where we are very different compared to Europe, and it's clear. Something like 11 cents on the dollar next to 19 in Europe in terms of what people are willing to spend on food, and one of the consequences is some of what Debbie's talking about. Kira, how do you feel about the quality of food and any changes you'd like to see there?
I'd have to agree that because my son has food allergies, there were many times that I sent a prepared lunch from home to school, and that did kind of remove me from that layer of the onion, just because I didn't have to worry about, you know, if he was getting enough of anything. But on the flip side, when we did partake in buying school lunch, then it kind of got those gears going for me and made me wonder, what is he taking in? What is he eating? Is he getting, what is he eating for breakfast? What things is he getting for lunch? So I think that if you have the option and you are sending food, then you're removing yourself from that community and from making these, from caring about these decisions.
Mm, it's a very interesting point. And as we get ready to wrap up, I want to bring Justin Murphy back here. He's the reason we're here, Democrat and Chronicle reporter who wrote the story on lunch shaming. And Justin, why don't you remind our listeners what Governor Cuomo had talked about, what we might see from the state level, and what you're going to be focusing on in your reporting going forward on this issue.
Yeah, Governor Cuomo's proposal is actually quite far-reaching. Proposals elsewhere in the country have banned sort of explicit practices like labeling, like physically labeling kids as truant or something.
Or offenders or whatever,
yeah.
Right?
He would say even providing alternate meals would be disallowed. The legislation that he's proposing doesn't have any funding attached to it, so that brings us right back to all the problems that we're having here. But as Debbie and Casey said, this is something, since I started reporting last spring until now, nearly every single Monroe County district has made changes in this. And I think it's going to be one of those kids, as people sort of evolve a fuller picture of what it means for a society to publicly educate a child, what all goes into that, I think you'll probably see more schools erring more on the side of feed the kids, talk to the parents later.
Also, Justin, I know you stressed earlier, and we'll stress again, you don't want people left with the impression that kids are getting shamed in every school all the time, every day. I do think when it does happen, on hopefully rare occasions, it's understandable that it sort of becomes a high wattage incident to make sure it doesn't happen more routinely. And that's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Fair enough?
Yep.
Great stuff. Find your work where? Where are we going to find you?
DemocratandChronicle.com.
And then your subscription, because I know you subscribe to the Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you for being here, as always. Nice having you.
Here we go.
Our thanks as well to the rest of our guests here. Mike Bulger, Healthy Communities Coordinator for the Healthy Kids Coalition at Common Ground Health. Always good, Mike. Thanks for coming back on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Kiara Warren's a parent. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Continued
good health for you and your family. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Debbie Beauvais, School Nutrition Director at Gates Child Eye, East Rochester, and East Irondequoit Central School Districts, and a member of the National School Nutrition Association Board. Debbie, thank you so much for the work you do. Thanks for coming in. Casey Kasorek, Superintendent of the Hilton Central School District. Thank you, Casey, for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
John Andrus, the engineer today. Thank you, John. Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you have a beautiful weekend, and we'll talk to you Monday on member-supported public radio.